Whereas offences against property have of late increased in and near the metropolis, and the local establishments of nightly watch and nightly police having been found inadequate to the prevention and detection of crime, and whereas it is expedient to substitute a new and more efficient system of police in lieu of such...
Peeler by Patrick Carroll, Episode 4.
Oh, Mr. Peel, what have you done? Your police act so grand, sir. It will be the cause, I have no doubt, of filling Van Diemen's land, sir. London now, believe me, sir, is overstocked with queer coats who wish the police act and you were sent to Jimmy Squaretoes.
And what do you want here, Reverend?
I wish to see Mr. Quinn.
Huh?
Martin Quinn.
Quinn? Is a new one?
Yes, he's been in... he's been here a few days only.
Let's see now. All right, Quinn. M for Martin. Third flight, number 31. Come, I'll point you in the right direction, Reverend.
Thank you. That would be most kind. God bless you.
If you'll be so kind as to go up that little set of steps through the lobby and up two more flights, we'll be in the third. 31 is almost to the end.
Yes, thank you. I think I shall find my way.
Anyone will direct you. They mostly all know their way about.
Merciful heavens.
Make it in. Make it in. Make it in.
Oh, yes. 31. Martin? Martin Quinn? Martin? Do you not know me?
What? I'm sorry, Mr. Lytton. I neither saw nor heard you at first. It's so gloomy in here and with my back to the door and I was far away. In fancy, at least.
My dear friend, what you must be suffering.
No. Suffering is too strong a word. Some do suffer in this place, but most do not. I seem to be merely numb.
But it is an appalling place. So foully close and dark and filthy.
Oh, you have never sailed in a ship transporting soldiers. This is Eden.
I do not seem to know what to say, my dear friend. I have nothing of comfort to offer, it appears. Nothing but prayer.
Prayer? No, I do not see how prayer will help me. It is the idleness which frightens me, Mr. Lytton. Even in so short a time, I've observed what idleness will do to most who come to this place.
Why, yes, I'm sure, but... Martin, I am ashamed, but this awful place has paralysed my thoughts. I feel entirely helpless.
I only ask one simple thing. If you can bear to return here again. When I left my lodgings with Mrs. Bell, I asked if she would keep my tools in some safe place, should I ever need them again. I feel I need them now.
What? Your coopering tools? Why? What possible use... What would you do with them, speaking practically?
Oh, no, I am quite practical. I spoke yesterday with the gentleman who presides over the coffee room on the floor below. I offered to do any work in my old trade which he might want. I am already bespoke for 6 new 5-gallon casks.
And will he pay you?
He will. Not so much as I would ask outside, but here the rent is very low and there are no parish rates to pay.
Of course, I'll call on Mrs. Bell directly. In fact... If there's no other way in which I can be of more help and consolation than I have...
Yes. No, do not linger here, Mr. Lytton. It is kind in you to come at all, but I cannot see you so distressed without becoming more distressed myself.
It is so, I fear. Then I will...
Good day, Martin. And how do you feel today? Oh, I didn't know you had a visitor already.
Did you want anything particularly, Florrie?
Well, just to know if you'd like to have me entertain you for tea... But seeing your present company, perhaps you'd rather sing a psalm.
I must be excused at present. Another time, perhaps.
Another time will be the first. Well, you cannot say as you wasn't asked. Afternoon, gentlemen. I shall take a turn upon the terrace.
Martin. How do you come to know such a creature?
Well, it is difficult not to know her.
But she's obviously nothing more than a common...
She is like myself, trying to ply her trade in order to free herself from this place.
Oh, upon my soul, Father, I never saw a man's face fall so far as that Galumpus Constable's did when Mr. Rowe gave his judgment.
I trust it has had a salutary effect upon him and upon his superiors.
How upon his superiors, Mr. Rowe?
Oh, my lord, Colonel Rowan and Mr. Mayne must be made to understand that they cannot presume to usurp the ancient privileges of the English bench.
I confess I was not aware that they did so.
It has always been we, the magistrates, who have had executive powers of policing, we and the parishes.
But do you not feel that the old police system had become perhaps too antique for these modern days?
Perhaps so. I do not doubt that some reform of the police was called for. We are, after all, are we not, the party of reform?
We are indeed, sir.
However, I cannot admit the wisdom of taking the police entirely out of the hands of those with the widest experience in such matters and placing them in the hands of two complete outsiders whose appointment is in the sole gift of the Home Secretary.
Oh, why, sir, there is no patronage attaching to the new police. The commissioners have assured me so themselves. In any event, we now have our own Secretary of State at the Home Department.
True, although I admit to some trepidation as to how Lord Melbourne will fare in that post.
I trust he will be less fawning toward the commissioners than was his predecessor.
Oh, depend upon it, my Lord Melbourne, when he leaves off cuckolding Irish bishops, will see to it that any credit earned by the new police will come to him, and any blame they attract will fall upon the commissioners.
My boy, I cannot approve of such a tone being used in reference to so distinguished a public man as Lord Melbourne.
Do not be a humbug, Father. We are three gentlemen drinking port, not a leading article in the Morning Chronicle.
I begin to doubt my wisdom in regretting that I so seldom see my eldest son at his father's table.
Come, come, Father, do not be out of countenance with me. Is this not an occasion of celebration? Mr. Rowe has cocked a snook at the commissioner who so beset him, and I have had my own revenge for their insolence to me.
Oh, I deplore the word revenge, my lord. However, it is true that your lordship's testimony ensured that justice was done.
In truth, Mr. Rowe, I made certain that it should have been, although justice was scarcely my object.
I beg your pardon, my lord.
You do not wish me to believe, sir, that you actually took my word against that of the benighted Constable Quinn. Why, a glance would tell you that he had not the wit to invent such a story.
Do you mean to tell us, sir, that you perjured yourself under oath?
Oath? Am I so weak-minded that my will shall be turned and my intentions baffled by that farrago of prettily told tales which we call the King James Version?
You are blasphemous, my lord.
Mr. Rowe, I apologize most humbly for my son's infamous conduct. I feel it to be a shameful reflection upon myself.
No, no, I pray, sir.
I think the ladies will begin to notice our absence.
Oh, of course, my lord.
You, sir, are at liberty to join us, stay where you are, or leave this house.
As there is yet port to be drunk, and as the ladies are all my relations, I shall remain here, thank you, Father.
Who's there? Who comes on a poor blind man? Hey, Queen Spare at all.
None of your bog patois to me, Davy. Your English is bleary enough.
Ach, Mr. Morley, sir. Cade me la fault, you got us, sir. Begging your pardon, you're more nor welcome, sir. Come to the fire, poor as it is.
Now, tappy Davy Kearns, do I see a white stick and an old black eye shade?
You haven't gone back to the blind harper's lay, have you?
Oh, I'm terribly reduced, Mr. Morley, sir. I've nothing to eat but brown tommy and old peg, and not seen a glass of porter this fortnight past.
Ah, you're an audacious old scoundrel. If a man were to take up this floor, he'd find a king's ransom.
Mr. Morley, it isn't so at all. Of course, I'll have a few poor pence put by for the day when I'll go home to die and be buried in my native heath.
Ah, your native heath will be a lime pit in Newgate if there were any justice in this world.
Cruel words, Mr. Morley, cold and cruel.
Oh, do I not know you, Davy? Have I not compounded with you myself for the return of loot before this day? Why, now that Ikey Solomons has gone to Botany Bay, there isn't a brazener face fence that shows himself in the brown bear than you.
It has ever been the height of pleasure to me to transact business with so genteel a man as yourself, Mr. Morley.
Transact business, huh? Yeah, if the justices didn't turn a blind eye, we should all be hanged for transacting such business, eh?
How can that be so? All you people at Bow Street, Mr. Townsend, Mr. Ruthven, you've all of you done the same. It's the regular old way.
Well, it's a hanging offence for all of that.
Ah, sure, never mind, Mr. Morley, sir. It'll be too late to change it all, be this. And now, would you be telling me how I come to be honoured today with a visit from Mr. Morley?
Well, that's right, Davy. It all comes to business in the end. Well, I tell you that I've seen a deal of late of an old chum of yours.
And who would that be, Mr. Morley?
Peter, the Screever.
Ah, the bold Screever. The prime fist. The primest fist anywhere.
And have you met the Screever of late,
Well, hasn't Mr. Reed that lovely shop now? The height of respectability.
Yes, have you met him, Davy, in, let us say, the last 2 months?
Mr. Morley, sir, I'd tell a lie if I said I hadn't.
Any business?
Ah, 'twould betray a confidence to say, Mr. Morley.
Oh, come on. You're an old hand at that, Davy. Come on, out with it.
Now, he did have a few trinkets that he asked me to look after for him.
And have you still got them? Davy, I've got my own ways of finding out in the end. One word and the Lord Charles...
Now then, Mr. Morley, sir, you wouldn't take advantage of a poor old man. I couldn't just give them over. I'd be suffering a terrible loss if I did that.
I don't want to take them away, Davy. Only the sight of them. See, if they're concerned in my present bit of business, well, business it shall be. Yeah, in the regular old way.
Ah, if that's the way of it, Mr. Morley, don't say another word.
Yes.
There you are, Mr. Morley. Pretty as a picture.
Oh, trinkets, did you say? Well, did the Screever say where he bagged them?
He did not. No more did the other gentleman.
The other gentleman?
I never heard his name, Mr. Morley, upon my eyes. I met with him and Screever in a snug little house at the west end of the town. He stood the punch and was the height of genteel all around.
And what sort of looking man was he?
I couldn't take to say, Mr. Morley. He kept his hat on and was well wrapped up the whole time. And he sat in a shadow and never left his seat. More younger than older. And like I said before, pleasant and genteel in all his dealings.
Yeah, and is this the whole poodle? Come on, the truth now, Davy. Is there any you've gone and fenced already?
My eyes, Mr. Morley, sir. That's every piece I had of Screever, I swear it.
I want a list of these trinkets, Davy. And then I'll leave you to your prayers.
£300? I'd see him damned first. I'd see him damned in hell for the want of 3 pence.
Please, Father, I beg you. If not for his sake, he who served you for so long... Then for mine.
Why, God, am I in bedlam? Have I a daughter so mad with ingratitude and disobedience that she begs me to find out £300 to free a man who struck her father to the ground? He's in his proper place. Were he there only for his insolence to me, undutiful harridan?
It is true. I may be nearing madness. I do begin to fear for my reason. But undutiful... No, it is not just to call me undutiful. And if I were, dear God, have you no duty to me? Is it a father's duty to keep his child from her life's happiness? Is it his duty to make her every moment an affliction?
Dare to speak of my duty to you? I who feed and clothe you and give you a bed. My duty!
Please, I implore you, once more only... Make your peace with Martin Quinn and help to free him.
No, never.
Then I quit your house.
What?
This day, this hour, I shall go to him and stay with him if he will have me. If we should both starve and never see another day of liberty until he dies.
Is it a prison you want? You should have all the prisons you can bear. And not leave this house to enjoy it.
I shall. You must kill me to keep me here.
Must I? Must I, indeed?
Why? What an honour for my humble lock, Mr. Morley.
Afternoon, turnkey. You look tolerably fit and prosperous.
I holds up, Mr. Morley. Holds up and holds out.
I wish to see a new scholar of your name, a Quinn. Martin Quinn.
Oh, it's a remarkable thing how many does. Clergymen, police sergeants, and now Mr. Morley of Bow Street. He'll be the Duke of York next, I shouldn't wonder. Third flight, number 31. You know your way, Mr. Morley.
I do, Turkey, I do.
Good day to you, Margaret. And how do you find yourself today?
Make it in. Make it in.
Oh, that's fine, Margaret. I'm rejoiced to hear that.
Well, now, Constable, should it not have been the army after all?
Mr. Morley, you'll excuse the informality of the present arrangements.
Well, as to that, Constable, I've always been of the opinion that a Spartan mode of living may be a very wholesome thing.
You are acquainted with Sergeant Dutton, if I recall.
I have the honour. I hope to see you well, Sergeant.
Oh, for myself, sir, quite well, I thank you. Though I am naturally downcast to see our friend in such a place as this, and the victim of such an injustice as he has suffered.
Yes, I confess to much the same emotion, Sergeant.
Oh, a man must pay his just and lawful debts.
True, true. Civilization perishes otherwise.
Yes, but what of unjust and unlawful debts?
They must be sometimes paid as well. And how do you propose to do so, Constable?
Well, I hope to find a way. I've only now been saying to Sergeant Dutton that I shall soon have me old tools and will so be able to work at my trade.
You'll need to cooper a deal of barrels to realise those costs.
Yes, yes, £300. It's a long road home, but it's the only one I see.
But and your commissioners, I mean, can they do nothing?
I'm convinced that they would, if it were in their power to do so.
However, it is not apparently. Although surely, they must have some recourse.
No, I find it best not to dwell on such hopes. Sergeant, do you think you should be able to secure the timber I need?
Oh, I can see no obstacle to that, Constable.
Oh, my first need, you see, will be to construct a steam cabinet. Oh, it's true, I've not much space.
Yeah, but money, Constable. Have you money for such things? Look, if not, I'm no capitalist,
Do not think of it, Mr. Morley. I've managed to save enough in the past so as to be able to secure my needs.
Why?
And to pay the chummage that allows me this room for myself.
Why? With such means, I would have thought you could have paid...
No, I do not have so much as that, huh? £40 at most. But I shall eat, and soon I shall enjoy an income. Well, at least I trust I shall.
Sergeant Dutton, it's extremely fortunate that I find you here.
How so, Mr. Morley?
And I'd hope to ask Constable Quinn's assistance in a matter of business. Police business. You may be able to aid me as well.
Well, I'm sure we're at your service, Mr. Morley.
Indeed, sir.
I have here a list describing certain items of property which I believe have been stolen. My recollection is that the objects, if they indeed are the same, were stolen from a house in your division.
Oh, I see. Well, if I may. Small diamond and sapphire tiara, emerald pendant, gold ring set with emerald and diamonds. Yeah. Constable, do you not remember?
Yes, I do. They were reported as stolen from a house in Ely Place belonging to a widow.
Yeah, Mrs. Abraham.
Now, that was the lady's name, Sergeant, I'd swear to it. But Mr. Morley, is your list a complete one?
You recall some other pieces?
Oh, I believe I do. It's a brooch. Yeah? A cameo brooch.
Uh-huh.
A very distinctive one, as I recall its description. I may be mistaken, but such a thing sticks in my mind.
No, I do not think your memory is playing false at all.
Pray be comfortable, gentlemen. I confess I had not anticipated we should be receiving members of two learned professions at this time.
I trust you will forgive the liberty of my allowing Mr. Morley to share my appointment with you, gentlemen, but I find he feels the same concern which brings me here.
Colonel Rowan, Mr. Maine, it's very good of you to receive me at such unseasonable notice.
We, or at least I, have not had the honour of your acquaintance, Mr. Morley. But we could hardly be expected to deprive ourselves of the opportunity of becoming known to so famous a man.
Oh, yes, particularly one whose field of endeavour is related, however tangentially, to our own.
Oh, it's exceedingly gracious of you to say so, sir. At
At another time, sir, I would welcome an occasion when we might discuss the inevitable day when our two forms of police enterprise should be more closely integrated.
That would be most agreeable, Mr. Morley. For the moment, however, gentlemen, how may we serve you?
If Mr. Morley will permit me, we both wish to make the strongest representations on behalf of the imprisoned Constable Martin Quinn, who we believe has been the victim of a monstrous injustice.
Oh, the phrase does not overstate the case, gentlemen. The decision of the court should never have gone against the constable in the first instance. And after the verdict, well, for Mr. Rowe to set such impossibly punitive damages was entirely iniquitous.
Colonel?
Yes. Gentlemen, it is undoubtedly a highly irregular procedure, but perhaps it would be best if I request Mr. Mayne to read out to you a letter which we received early this morning from the Under Secretary of State at the Home Department. Mr. Mayne?
Indeed, Colonel, I have Mr. Phillips' letter here. To the Commissioners of the Metropolitan Police, dear sirs, the Secretary of State, Viscount Melbourne, acknowledges receipt of your letter of the 8th ult regarding Police Constable No. 47, Martin Quinn. In reply, Viscount Melbourne desires me to acquaint you that he cannot accede to your request that the Home Department in any degree mitigate the fines and costs, in default of which Constable Quinn has been imprisoned. Viscount Melbourne further requests me to state that to accede to such a request would be to cast an aspersion upon the entire magistracy of the country, and that he feels some surprise that the question did not appear to the commissioners in that light before they made their request. Yours, etc.
Well, the Secretary of State does not equivocate, at all events.
He does not, sir. Gentlemen, our helplessness in this business has left me with a damn bad conscience. I will not scruple to confess that within the bounds of a proper impartiality, I have watched Martin Quinn's progress in his short police career with a closer interest than I have that of almost any other recruit.
He is, by all accounts, very able in his duties.
True, Mr. Lytton, he is. But that apart, he has also my tacit encouragement as a former comrade in arms.
Comrade in arms, Colonel?
Yes, Mr. Morley. A constable at one time served in the 52nd Foot, my own regiment. As Corporal Quinn, he served under me at Waterloo.
Why, sir, I was aware that Constable Quinn had been a regular soldier, but I had no idea of his regiment. And at Waterloo?
Aye.
Why, such a time ago he must have been in swaddling clothes.
Not at all, Mr. Morley. Quinn, as I recall, would have been fully 15 or 16 years of age at that time.
Is that not still a tender age for battle, Colonel?
Bless you, sir. I was myself barely 14 when I became an ensign in the 52nd, and I was not the babe of the regiment by any means.
Gentlemen, these recollections of Constable Quinn's past must make us doubly despondent as to his present and immediate future.
True. I do not doubt that you gentlemen will feel that your interview with us has been a sadly unprofitable one.
Indeed not, Colonel. I am sure that Constable Quinn would and will be gratified to know that the commissioners are unwavering in their personal and professional esteem for him and in their strong conviction of his complete innocence.
If such an assurance affords Constable Quinn any consolation in his ordeal, it is most gladly given.
Yes, sir. Martin Quinn stands in need of his friends. But it is not mere sympathy he requires. It is help of another kind. Oh, yes. Help of another kind.
Miss? Miss Staples, are you all right, Miss?
Yes, Mrs. Gregory. Come in.
I brought you some supper, Miss.
Yes. Is he downstairs?
I'm not to speak to you, miss. His orders. I'll put the food here.
Oh, you must help me, Mrs. Gregory. You must.
But I cannot. There's nothing I can do. If he should find me out, I don't know what...
Yes, you are right. It is not fair to...
Mrs. Gregory, you have your orders.
Please, quickly, before he comes, take this. Take it and give it to Mr. Lytton.
I can't, miss.
Please. Thank you, Mrs. Gregory.
What's this? Off with you, Mrs. Gregory. I shall bring this dutiful girl her food myself in future.
Take the food away. I will starve before I eat or drink again in this house.
Downstairs, Mrs. Gregory.
Yes, sir.
Low brazen.
Will you beat me again?
Should I choose to starve yourself willfully, you who are the slave to your own appetites and who have never had the will of your own in 24 years?
I have a will now because I have an object.
Be content. You will never attain it.
You will not leave this room until I see you broken back to your duty and obedience to me.
Then I shall die in this room.
And as to your object, he's done. Not one in 500 with debt such as his leaves that place but in a coffin.
He is here in a moment, Edward. Do you really think it wise that you should be present during his visit?
Why should I not be present? My dear Amelia, am I to be inconvenienced by such a fellow?
But he is remarkably...
Mr. Morley, ma'am.
Good day, Mrs. Gascoigne.
Good day, Mr. Morley.
I have redeemed my promise to call again.
So I see, sir. I regret that your visit does not find me entirely disengaged.
Well, I'm sure this gentleman will excuse a brief intrusion upon matters of business.
Viscount Troll, allow me to present Mr. Morley.
Oh, your servant, my lord. Although we've not been introduced, I had the opportunity of hearing your lordship's testimony in the case of your coachman and Constable Quinn.
The renowned Mr. Morley of Bow Street, I believe. Extraordinary. Your reputation precedes you, sir.
Indeed, my lord.
Most assuredly. Tell me, Mr. Morley, is it, upon my soul, I would not distress your feelings for the world, but is it true that you began life as a coal heaver?
Why, yes, my lord. In my early days, I did labour upon the Thames barges.
How remarkable.
I will take the liberty of observing that had your lordship begun life as a coal heaver, I should think it likely that he would have remained a coal heaver to this day.
My Lord Troll has been parried most effectively, I perceive.
Not at all, Mrs. Gascoigne. It has ever been my opinion that it is most becoming in us that we remain gracefully in the station to which we are born.
Perhaps so, my lord. In any case, are you perfectly sure that you would not prefer to withdraw while I speak with Mr. Morley?
On the contrary, madam. I am not to be put out of countenance by policemen, however exalted they may have become in the minds of the vulgar.
As you please, my lord. Mr. Morley, have the goodness to state your business.
Gladly, ma'am. Mrs. Gascoigne, I observe that you include in your present costume a cameo brooch, which I believe you also wore on the occasion of my first visit here.
Why, did I?
Yes. I remember remarking my admiration of it to our friend, Mr. Reed. Be so good as to tell me where you obtained it.
Why, I hardly... My lord?
Believe me, madam, I have no secrets from Mr. Morley.
Why, the piece was, in point of fact, a gift to me from his lordship.
Yes. Mrs. Gascoigne and myself, being friends of long standing, the brooch was a present to mark her recent birthday.
Indeed. And what will your lordship say when I inform him that I have every reason to believe that the object presently adorning Mrs. Gascoigne's bosom is stolen property?
Stolen?
Here, shouldn't you be more interested in what goes into them kegs than in the kegs themselves? I would be.
Yeah, no doubt you would be, Florrie.
Here, don't you want a lap of this? Best Holland.
Yeah, in a while, perhaps, when I've done with this.
I don't think you're a natural man, Martin. Indeed I don't.
How so, Florrie?
You don't want nothing. That ain't natural.
Oh, I have my wants, Florrie. Just as much as another.
Make it in. Oh, Mr. Peel. That was episode 4 of Peeler by Patrick Carroll. Mick Ford was Martin Quinn, with James Booth as Jeremiah Morley, Richard E. Grant as Lord Troll, Elizabeth Bell as Mrs. Gascoigne, and Joanna Myers as Mariah Staples. Peter Jeffrey was Colonel Rowan, and Killian McKenna, Richard Main. John Staples is played by Ian Lindsay, the Reverend Lytton by Timothy Carlton, and Lord Laverton by James Green. Other parts are played by Ronald Herdman, Mark Straker, Timothy Bateson, Susan Sheridan, and Elizabeth Kelly. The singer was Martin Carthy. Peeler was directed by Janet Whittaker.
For Mr. Pooh's new watchman will be far too strong to fear you.